Hello, welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. The October 2018 edition of Alaska Economic Trends has projections for the expected demands for Alaska's workforce that includes over 10,000 new healthcare jobs by the year 2026. That's a greater than 20% increase since 2016. The increase in demand is driven in part by increased need for healthcare by Alaska's aging population. As the population ages, Alaska's healthcare workforce is aging into retirement. So what attracts young adults into careers in healthcare? And what is the new generation of healthcare professionals' impact on the face of healthcare? I'm your host today, aging baby boomer physician, Dr. Jay Butler. And with me in the Elmo Sackett Studios is millennial Rachel Thompson, president of the University of Alaska Anchorage Student Nurses Association. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today in this multimodal extravaganza is Dr. Marianne Murray, director of the UAA School of Nursing, who's joining us by phone from Arizona. Dr. Murray, thank you for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. It's great to be here.
And from the KTOO studios in Juneau is Dan Robinson, Chief of Research and Analysis at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. So today we are discussing millennials in Alaska's healthcare workforce. And we invite all of you to join the conversation by calling us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. And if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8433. You can also contact us by email at line1@alaskapublic.org. All one word, line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. So as is our tradition, we'll start with some definitions. What is a millennial?
Well,
that's a toss-up question. So whoever strikes the buzzer first gets to go.
I think I heard Rachel.
I can tell you.
Dang. Hi. Well, I mean, millennials have a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people, but I think in general, it kind of encompasses the generation that's coming of adult age, kind of early 2000s, includes some of the generation that was born in the 1980s and in the early 90s, and I definitely qualify for that.
Okay.
I'll just jump in to add that this generational conversation, it tends to be a little loose definitionally. The one exception is the baby boomers, who are fairly rigidly defined as people born between 1946 and 1964. But the idea with the millennials, like Rachel said, is people who entered the working world and adult life in this new generation, grew up with the internet, is another characteristic that's important.
Okay, so and we've of course heard other terms, Generation Next, which I think fits with Rachel's definition, Echo Boomers, Trophy Kids. I guess that's named after their helicopter parents, which is really a great setup for Prentice Pemberton's show next week. So when we speak of the healthcare workforce, so we've defined millennials, we've talked about the baby boomers as well. Actually, before we get on, Gen X is another group that we talk about. Is that different from the millennials?
This is Marianne.
Yeah, go ahead, Marianne.
I'm a Generation Xer, and we are different than millennials, just in the age. Our birth, usually born between 1965 and 1979. So we're kind of the sandwiched in between the baby boomers and the millennials, and we're the least populated kind of generation.
Okay. So let's talk about how that impacts the healthcare workforce. That's a broad category. So what types of work is included in that category of healthcare workforce? And Dan, I think that's probably a good question for you. We have two strong representatives of the nursing profession here, as well as advanced practice nursing. But I realize it's much broader than that. So give us some flavor of just what we're talking about.
Right. Yeah, it is, as you say, very broad. You think of everything from neurologist to an orderly in terms of education and training required, age, income. So it's that's probably the main point, is that we're not just talking about a group of doctors, and we're not just talking about home health aides. We're talking about everybody that you would encounter when you, whether it's go to a hospital, go to a clinic, go to a public health center, very 70, 80 something different occupations.
And of course, if we're talking about a healthcare center, then we begin talking about things like behavioral health, which is very clearly part of healthcare, but then also social work, social services. Is that part of the equation and the discussion?
Definitely. Behavioral health is and it's one of the strongest growing, and some of the highest needs are in those occupations. So yes, that's I'm glad you remind us, because we tend to think sometimes of pediatrics or these kind of traditional, but behavioral health and social work, health kind of public health type occupations are in there as well.
Okay. So when we've sort of defined the broad category of healthcare workforce, we've talked about millennials as the generation that came of age in the 21st century. So how do millennial workers in general differ from the Gen Xers, the baby boomers, the so-called greatest generation, which would be my parents, the post-World War II workers? Dan, that may be another one for you.
Yeah, no, I'll jump in. It's interesting. I think we generally tend to exaggerate the extent to which people are different. They respond to kind of the conditions they grew up in, and I think the what characterizes the millennials most is they grew up in this fast pace. Entertainment at their fingertips, education at their fingertips. Kind of the old ways were fading away in terms of rigid structure. So I think they pick things up quick. They tend to have shorter attention spans. So that there are positives and weaknesses in that. But the strongest positive I would say is they want to ask why. They want to understand why, and they'll pick things up quickly and change quickly.
All right. Well, as a baby boomer, I have to say I really like millennials because of those very characteristics. So do millennials then have certain inherent skills and abilities that their older coworkers lack? And maybe let's start, Rachel, in terms of just what you observe as you're in your training, and you many of your mentors are older healthcare providers. What do you see as some of the differences between you and them?
Well, I would definitely say that the technology is an aspect of that. Exclude myself from that group because technology is not usually my friend. But in general, my generation tends to be very good with technology, and healthcare is kind of a driving force in advancement in technology. And it has to be as we find better cures and more advanced ways to diagnose. And so I think it's a really great thing that my generation brings to the table, with being able to adapt quickly to so many technological changes that happen, which is not necessarily the greatest strength of the generations that have come before us. They have so many great, amazing things that they bring to the healthcare industry. But one of those things that my generation is kind of forerunning in is the ability to adapt quickly to technological changes and then help bring up the generation that's coming up behind us, who all they know is the technology age, kind of bridge that gap between those two generations and say, we know how to adapt to these changes. Let's help those that have gone before us to kind of integrate into that as well, and then help those that are coming up behind us to adapt to not only the technological changes, but the other requirements that are demanding in the healthcare force, like communication and critical thinking.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that, you know, we're talking about general behaviors of a generation. We don't mean to stereotype people at all, but I have to say, as a physician and someone who started their training and their early medical practice before there was such a thing as an electronic medical record. It's been interesting to observe how my colleagues, some have adapted, others that was a major driver in their early retirement. And
right.
So what I observe is that many of the older physicians that are still in practice have sort of as a characteristic, they're more open to innovation and change. I guess there I go feeding even more stereotypes. So Marianne, from your perspective as a Gen Xer and a educator of young nursing students, what do you observe as some of the inherent skills and abilities, the pluses of the millennials as opposed to earlier generations?
Well, a few things that are really, you know, poignant about this group of millennial nurses is the fact that they really admire and strive for advancing their degrees and education. So I just did a little study on this actually and did a presentation, but up to 71% of nurses right now, millennial nurses, are actually pursuing a higher degree. So they are absolutely probably one of the most educated groups of nurses coming into the workforce, which changes the dynamic as nursing at one time was almost considered an apprenticeship. Now there's a lot more nurses coming into nursing excited about things like data, things like evidence-based practice. A lot of nurses now, as soon as they graduate, they go for advanced practice degrees, such as nurse practitioner, family nurse practitioner, psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. They're seeking leadership opportunities. For me, this group is especially culturally and racially tolerant. I think it's fantastic. And they do want open and honest feedback in a manner that, you know, is more collaborative instead of a kind of shame and blame situation, which we've had in the past.
Right, which is a critical part of quality improvement in healthcare as we consider some of the mistakes that have been made in things like the Institute of Medicine or National Academies of Medicine reports on the chasm between the goals of healthcare and the reality sometimes, thinking also of Atul Gawande's checklist manifesto of changing the culture in healthcare as the culture in the cockpit has changed in the aviation industry over the past 40 years, that the pilot or the physician is not above question and, in fact, needs to be questioned, and it's a team that takes care of patients and lands the plane safely. So I'd like to take a call. Becky in Anchorage, welcome to Line 1, your health connection.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You have a question.
I do. So I'm a millennial considering applying to nursing school at UAA, but I've heard that there's really long wait times, and that's not something I can really afford. Is there any truth to those stories?
All right. Marianne, well, how about you take that one?
Hi, Becky. Good morning. In the previous past, there was a wait list. We used to have a wait list at the UAA School of Nursing. And over the last 2 years, the wait list is now gone. And what we've incorporated is a competitive admission process. And so, really, we actually take over 200 new nursing students throughout the state. There's frankly, a place for everyone that applies. It's sometimes in smaller communities, but we definitely have places and spots available. What the best thing for you to do would be to come in and meet with one of our nursing advisors. We have three of them on staff, and they are wonderful in helping you kind of guide your path into the nursing program. We have a lot of different paths to get in there, but I'm excited that you're excited to come into nursing because we need more nurses. We definitely continue to have a shortage, and to have people apply that have enthusiasm for nursing is fantastic.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us on Line 1, Becky. We hope you'll be one of the 10,000 that we need in Alaska by the year 2026. So Some studies have indicated that the climate of the workplace are of greater interest to millennials than earlier generations. When I say climate, these are things like relationship with management, and I hope no one who works for me is about to call in. Equality, equity in opportunity, intolerance of harassment, which touches on what Marianne was talking about, the level of tolerance among millennials. So what are millennials seeking when they go into healthcare? Maybe Rachel, you could share a little of your own experience as well as your observation among your peers.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things, I mean, pay is definitely a factor, and I think it is an important factor, but I would say that a lot of my cohorts and I that are currently going through the School of Nursing, a lot of us are really interested in how we're going to be treated in the workplace. Do we have an environment that cultivates learning and safe learning where you can make mistakes under the safety net of observation from people who have more experience, who aren't going to condemn you for the mistakes that you make, as well as opportunities for advancement, like you mentioned, Dr. J. I think that that's a really big thing. Like Dr. Murray was saying, we have a lot of nursing students and nurses who are pursuing higher levels of education. And with that, we do that with a purpose. And so if we're pursuing those higher levels of education and then we don't have those opportunities to advance, it kind of somewhat defeats the purpose just a little bit. So having those places where we can start working maybe at the bedside and then advance into management positions and positions where we're working with upper level management to effect big change in our direct communities within the hospitals or clinics or public health offices that we choose. And I think that my generation really likes to bring innovation. And so being able to take on positions where we have the opportunities to effect change is really important to us as well.
And Dr. Murray, are there opportunities for nurses or other healthcare providers who are in the workforce to be able to do fellowships or whatever type of experience to further develop their leadership skills and be prepared to go into management? In a little background on that question, I oftentimes observe that it's people who are either really good clinicians or have really excellent technical skills or scientific abilities that end up getting promoted, but oftentimes they're not the best leaders or the best managers, and they, not any fault of their own, other than the fact that they've never actually received any training or background in those areas.
Yeah, Dr. J, you're absolutely right. That's who the leaders have been in the past. I think that finally, we're starting to see some real improvement in our mentoring and coaching in the healthcare facilities for our up-and-coming leaders. I know that in a lot of the actual hospitals here in Alaska, they do have a up to 1 year preceptorship model for a lot of our new graduates, which has been very successful. And I think from there, we need to incorporate a leader type of mentoring and coaching type of education as well. These millennial nurses actually are looking for somebody to be that coach, that mentor, and they're looking for individuals who help them to achieve their goals. And for someone of my age, you know, it gives me personal fulfillment to see and to help mentor and coach new up-and-coming leaders in nursing. So it's a win-win. We just have to wrap our arms around it and kind of create that framework for collaboration and for success.
And, of course, being a mentor is not something that comes natural to everyone either. I'm curious, does the university currently have any programs or outreach to develop mentorship skills?
It's great that we are on that track. We have actually just recognized that is a huge need for us to have some sort of framework that actually defines and delivers an educational piece to the community and to our actual working nurses, and helping them to become mentors and helping them to become preceptors so they feel like they have the tools to be successful. Not everybody walks into becoming a teacher or a mentor, and it's natural. It's a lot of the times it's very unnatural, and giving good feedback in a way that allows the student or the nurse to grow personally and professionally in a manner that is kind but necessary is something that it's teachable, but it doesn't always come naturally. So we are on that track. I'm glad that you brought it up. It's something that's on our top kind of strategies for the next 2 years.
Rachel.
I would also like to add to that, we actually had a student a couple years back who went through the nursing program, and as a student, she recognized a need to have some peer mentors who have very recently just been in the seats that they've been in. And so this young lady decided to start a peer mentorship program on her own, in her own time, with her own resources, to kind of fill that need in the interim as the university's working on these resources. And so she began this beautiful program where students who have made it to their third semester of nursing school can take on that peer mentorship role with the students who are just beginning their journey in the School of Nursing. And so talk about innovation. That's, you know, one of our students stepping into that role, which is pretty incredible.
Not to mention taking on a remarkable leadership role.
Exactly. Yeah. Very amazing.
And I think it was Dan earlier talked about how the experience of a generation will sometimes influence then their behavior in the workforce. I think that's probably true in terms of how we acquire our learning as well as what kind of mentors we are. I certainly entered my medical clinical training, postgraduate training, at the time when most of the young faculty had graduated medical school in the 60s, which meant you did a year of internship and then you went to Vietnam. And so they were very used to operating by the seat of their pants, and literally operating sometimes by the seat of their pants, in improvising and operating without a lot of guidance. And I think that was expected of my generation too, that if you weren't up with the patient at 2 a.m, you were expected to be with your nose in a textbook and kind of learning on your own. But fortunately, many of those people were also excellent teachers as well. So I think we're at a great time for a break. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Line One.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska reminds residents that open enrollment for individual and family health plans is now through December 15th. Many Alaskans qualify for a premium tax credit, which could lower the cost of health care coverage. Enroll at primera.com. This message sponsored by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your co-host today, Dr. Jay Butler, and my guests today are Rachel Thompson, president of the UAA Student Nurses Association, Dr. Marianne Murray, director of the UAA School of Nursing, and Dan Robinson, chief of research and analysis at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Our topic today is millennials in the healthcare workforce of Alaska. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a millennial, we've already heard from one considering a career in healthcare. Our panel of experts would love to talk to you. So please join the conversation by calling us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also send us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. So as we think about the millennials and the relationship with the older generation, let me start with a quote. The children love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt of authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. Children are now tyrants. Anybody recognize that quote? It was from Socrates in the fourth generation B.C. So there's always been intergenerational tensions. Probably the lesser known quote of Socrates was, "Hey, get off my lawn." So when we're thinking about how the older generation sometimes rants. One that we hear is that the millennials are entitled. That's just like my parents' generation said that the baby boomer hippies were all spoiled. What are some of the ways, I guess, I'll get open this up for anybody, that we can help resolve some of those intergenerational conflicts? Dead silence.
I'll jump in. That's a good question. I love that you started with the Socrates quote, because we joke in my office about the exaggerated differences between generations. And as long as people are kind of having fun with it, it stays fun. but you know, part of the criticisms of the millennials in terms of jumping around with jobs, a lot of them came of age during a national recession, so that they inherited, or they were exposed to less job security. Healthcare is interesting, though, because healthcare workers, most of them, have been in a high demand for a very long time, so they get to call the shots in a way that people becoming nurses in the 70s wouldn't have. So that's, I think, part of the fun way to think about this is they've had market power a little bit for a long time. I mean, Rachel, when she graduates, will have lots of options for getting a job, and that's less normal than millennials may think.
I've already offered her one.
It's already done. Has she accepted? That's the main.
She's holding out.
Holding out for my options.
So this is Marianne, and I'm going to jump in, Rachel, if that's okay with you. You've got some. But the other thing, and Dan's absolutely right. This, you know, this generation has graduating almost 90% or 98%, actually probably 100%, will find a job, especially in nursing. The growth rate for nurses is supposed to continue exponentially. Right now, there's 3.1 million nurses in America, and it's supposed to go up to 4 million, so you can imagine that there's going to be a job for a nurse. But you're right, Dr. J, because nationally, about 21% of the millennial nurses leave their job in their first year. And so I get asked a lot from healthcare worker or healthcare leaders, how do I keep my millennial worker involved, or recruitment and retention? Like, how can I best help them with that? And one of the things that we have to do is seek first to understand, you know, kind of to be understood. And so I hear a lot about the miscommunication between the generations, you know, in the acute care setting, or why do you always want to change the older generation saying to them, you know, why do you always want to change things? Why do you want to incorporate technology? So I think one of the things that we can do best as healthcare leaders and to change that culture, like you talked about earlier, is to really understand or seek to understand each other. And Rachel brought that up earlier with kind of their generation becoming a bridge with technology. There's some of that as well, but we as older, kind of more established nurses can talk to and to help millennials understand some key, you know, leadership things such as emotional intelligence and self-awareness and those kind of things that we can teach each other.
Yeah, I would agree with that on all fronts. I think that one of the biggest things that both generations kind of need to take into consideration is that neither generation is inherently wrong with how they're approaching healthcare or the decisions that they're making in their society and their cultures. I think that it has so much to do with our ability to understand why the generation is doing the things that they're doing. What's the motivation behind it? And understanding that helps us to kind of take a different perspective in that my generation needs to look at those who've gone before us and say what went well, what did they do that was really effective and very good for the communities in our nation and our healthcare workforce and our patients, and incorporate that. And even if we tweak it just a little bit, that's still innovation, but it's not changing the whole process. And the generation that's gone before us needs to look at us and say, what is it that they can do really well? And how do we nurture them and mature them in great ways to do those things, but incorporate those strengths that the generation that they're in has to bring to the table. And I think there's this beautiful meshing that can take place if we're all open to what the other individuals can bring to that venue.
Well, that sounds like good general advice, period. So, Rachel, you mentioned earlier just my impression as you describe how you and your peers look at your careers, and as Marianne described, the number of nurses that go on to get advanced practice degrees, there seems to be more of a strategic approach to career advancement. What expectations do millennials have regarding where they'll be 10, 20 years from now?
I would say that a lot of us would like to see ourselves in some sort of leadership position. Not everyone, because I think that there's a lot of individuals that are going into nursing because they genuinely love direct bedside care, or they genuinely love just the job of public health. And I say just the job of public health. That's a huge job. I'm not at all trying to
minimize
that.
I'm the wrong person to say just public health, dude, by the way.
Yeah, as I so respect those individuals. But I would say opportunities for advancement, I think, is really what we're looking for. And being able to see ourselves in 10 years in a position where we are actually affecting change directly into our communities. That's where I would like to see myself. I have some pretty high aspirations. And I would like to see myself in a position where I can take the ideas that I have or that others have around me and implement them to change the culture, to change the safety, and to change the outcome of our patients that we're treating.
So speaking of leadership, what do millennials want from their bosses, if you will, the supervisors and higher level management in healthcare organizations?
That is a big question. I think one of the things that we would like to see is to be respected. And not necessarily just respected because I'm a person and I need to be respected as a human being. That seems a little bit inherent, but to be respected as a valuable member of the workforce, that even though we're new in this career, even though we have a lot to learn, to be respected as a resource that can be utilized effectively and to be treated well. And again, I bring it back to being able to make mistakes without being thrown under the bus, so to speak, with having a mentor is a great opportunity that we could have to be brought up. I think that would be a great thing, is to be mentored and to be brought up and have those opportunities provided by our leadership and our bosses.
Okay. Dan or Marianne, any further thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is Marianne. And I totally agree with Rachel. The other thing what I found just with teaching these students is that they appreciate frequent conversations about their performance. They have to have their performance measures. They have to understand what the expectations are. There's almost always there needs to be a rationale why you're asking them to do what you're asking them to do. So they have to understand the why behind that. For some of us that grew up in the age where, you know, you just kind of did what you were told, it's a lot of work to just remember that you always have to have the rationale. And the feedback that you give students and nurses and healthcare workers has to be framed in a way that allows them to grow and doesn't, like Rachel said, shame them or make them feel like they're not being part of the team. One of the other things that I see is that we used to consider, you know, time of service to be an indicator whether or not you're ready for leadership, and that no longer is the case. So for millennials, they have to prove themselves in some ways that they're ready for leadership roles, and not by time and service, because a lot of them actually move fairly quickly or leave jobs fairly quickly.
Okay. So reminder to listeners, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Our topic of discussion today is millennials in the healthcare workforce, and we welcome you to join the conversation by calling in toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752. You can also drop us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. So let me bring up a third rail question. They say the power is in the third rail, so I guess that's a good thing. Hopefully I won't fry myself here. How, in general, again, this is just a general question, how do millennials view organized labor? Do they, this is probably a best question for Dan, because this is broader than just healthcare. Do they join unions as often as their 20th century forebears did?
Yeah, it's a fun question. So a little background. Long-term, union membership has been in decline, and fairly steep decline. At its peak in the 70s, we just had a whole lot of more manufacturing jobs, and unions were much stronger. What I suspect, and I'll be interested to hear from Rachel whether this is true, that millennials will struggle a little bit to see the value or the need to be part of organized labor. There would be some exceptions, kids who work apprenticeships and are kind of they're indoctrinated into the idea of unions being something that helps them get long lifetime work benefits. But in healthcare, I suspect that millennials will not have the kind of clear conception of why they would be a member of a union.
Yeah, Dan, I think you make a good point. I think that as far as our generation goes, we didn't see the implications of the unions when they were established and when they were really at their height. And I think that that does hinder our perspective of the value of unions. I have a little bit of a different perspective. My husband has been in kind of the manual labor industry. And so I see that from a little bit of a different perspective. But I think we do see some value in it, just as we have several organizations in our local area here in Anchorage that do have union representation and those who don't. I think there needs to be more education about the value of unions and what some of the hindrances of having a union could be. And I think if we do some education, our generation could make some very good decisions about how that affects us, as well as how we might be able to affect change in that particular area of the healthcare workforce.
I have a question. This is Marianne. I have a question for Dan, actually, about, since we're speaking broadly, Dr. J, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Is this population of millennials, what's their employment rate, from healthcare perspective, but kind of nationally? Because I think that there's a large group of younger adults that are struggling to find a job and are struggling, that they might be well-educated, they might have a degree, but they're struggling to find a job that pays well. Is that something the unions are kind of understanding now? And I'm just interested in that national perspective.
It may be an opening for unions. So long-term, and some of this goes back to the last big U.S. recession, the Great Recession, 2008-2009. Labor force participation, especially among males, is down. So there are more working-age males in particular who aren't working and they're not seeking work. And some of the reasons, or one that gets a lot of press, is that they're discouraged. They don't think there are jobs. So the kind of old-fashioned get a job, have a lot of job security, that's part of what unions helped provide. Now you get a job, especially when things are changing fast, you lose a job. If depending on your occupation, it might be a long slog to get another one, and at least in the last couple of decades, increasingly young males and working age males, and it's true a little bit of females, but it's a distinct difference, are just opting out, and that is an interesting opening potentially for unions to reemerge.
Dan, you touched on something that I thought would be interesting to discuss, totally apart from generational differences, is just the gender makeup of the workforce. Thinking about particularly healthcare, among my older generation, a female physician was really quite unusual. By the time I was in medical school, about 40% of the class was female, and nationally, I think that number is actually a little above 50% now. I think the last time I had the honor of doing the white coat ceremony at the WAMI program at UAA, definitely more than half of the class was female. How is that changing the character of the healthcare workforce?
Yeah, well, and even starting a little more broadly, the millennials are the first generation where women have more bachelor's degrees. There are more female bachelor's degree holders than males, and that there's still lots of time for that group to seek education and get it. But interestingly, healthcare and some occupations are still, and nursing is one example, less so than it used to be, but still the dominant majority are females. I think that will continue to change, it's a little bit surprising to us as we've looked at gender in occupations that it's as sticky as it has been. There are plenty of occupations that have historically been male dominated that still are. It's not moving very much, and that's I guess something we're curious about and don't nearly have the answers to. But the idea that all occupations will eventually be 50-50 just doesn't nearly bear out in the data.
All right. Well, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with the third period of Line 1 after a one-minute break for the stations down the line.
Funding for Line 1, Your Health Connection, was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your co-host today, Dr. Jay Butler, and my guests are Rachel Thompson, president of the UAA Student Nurses Association, Dr. Marianne Murray, director of the UAA School of Nursing, and Dan Robinson, chief of research and analysis at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Our topic today is millennials in the healthcare workforce of Alaska, and we'd love to have you join the conversation. If you have questions or comments, give us a call to talk with us live on the air at 1-888-353-5752. And if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8433. You can also shoot us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. So Dan was talking about the influence of the increased proportion of women who are in the workforce, particularly in healthcare, and some of the traditional and stereotyped images of various gender roles in healthcare. I know more men who are going into nursing. I'm curious, maybe Marianne, from your perspective, first of all, is that even a accurate observation? And if so, how is that changing the face of nursing?
So you absolutely are right. More men are coming into nursing. I think in the 1980s, it was about 7% of males went into nursing, and now we're up to about 12%. And actually at UAA, which I think is fantastic, some of our cohorts have 18% to 20% males as students in the nursing program. I am married to a male nurse, so I think that for me, I think it's fantastic. One of the things I think that really bring men into nursing is the flexibility of the schedule, the ability to make a difference quickly, the ability to have a job that wherever you go, moving, et cetera, you'll always work. And the fact that you're actually using your brain or you're critically thinking almost all the time. There's sometimes that's a bad thing, but most of the time just being able to make decisions and have autonomy in the workplace is something that I think male nurses and female nurses appreciate.
So as we consider the changing healthcare workforce, are there workplace paradigms that just aren't going to hold up with the younger generation as the millennials come in and become the real boots on the ground healthcare providers and also the managers of healthcare? I think we touch on some of the issues related to tolerance of things that bad behavior that was tolerated for too long. But are there other issues as it relates to scheduling or whatever?
This is Marianne. I think that one of the things that I've seen, at least in the new graduates that we've seen, if the facility will allow the nurses, at least from nursing perspective, to schedule themselves, to do self-scheduling, it usually helps quite a bit with the retention of those nurses. One of the big things for millennials is the ability to have time off when needed and to really, you know, their life is a priority. It's not necessarily work does not come before their life. So, and Rachel, you can kind of jump in there and make sure that I'm not telling a fib.
Oh, no, I would definitely agree with you, Dr. Murray. I think that the ability to have flexibility in our schedules and in our lives is huge, especially as we're finding a lot of nursing students and new nurses are often second career individuals. They have families. They're a little bit older sometimes, and they need that flexibility in their schedule in order to have an effective family life and have an effective individual life. And I think that that is a very attractive thing to us as well. So, and I know that a lot of us have, you know, desire to travel and to do things outside of work. And I think that there is a shift from, you know, work all the time and, you know, that being the priority to wanting to really be individuals and really have the time with our families that, you know, maybe we've worked so hard for. It's definitely a priority.
Okay. So we have a caller, Caroline. Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection. You have a question for our panel today.
Yes, there are a couple of things I wanted to mention, of course, fueled by public radio, of course, to know any of this stuff. I heard the cost of our scholarships for people and the educational costs. They come out of school with massive debts, which, of course, has cut down the purchase of homes by the younger people, and that impacts hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs throughout the nation. And then the other thing had to do with some years, I'd say about a decade ago, the statistic was that as women get into industries such as medicine, and not as a nurse, but as an MD, that the salaries paid to that general area drop. And, of course, it may have some impact on men coming into the nursing field, which I think is wonderful. We need the perspective of both males and females in any job because it's always a bit different. So those are two of the things, and there's so much more. We need people. We need enough people so that people don't get worn out and move on to other jobs because they just can't keep up with the stress of something they've chosen to do and yet are in essence punished by the small number of people that are available and that the community is willing to pay for being in these different jobs that are stressful.
All right. Caroline, thank you for your question and for joining us today. So, panel, this issue of the cost of education, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'll jump in to say that educational debt is a growing problem in the country. It's so credit card debt's under control, home mortgage debt. Those things are kind of at historically healthy places. But educational debt is growing. The cost of education keeps going up. So it's something we need to wrestle with. Healthcare, it's a little bit less of a problem because there's so much certainty that when you're done, you'll have a job. The issue there that could come up and that would come up is if you got partway through a program, didn't finish it, you had these loans, other bills related to education, and you didn't have the credential to pay them off. But it's certainly something that should be part of this conversation, and we should all figure out how to not necessarily forgive the debt, but maintain the keep the cost from going up too fast, figure out ways for loan forgiveness, whatever options there are. But it is, I'm glad somebody raised that issue. It's an important one.
Yeah, I would.
Dan, I think you're...
Go ahead, Dr. Murray.
I think Dan's right on. I think that if hospitals and larger facilities and employers of healthcare workers recognize that one of the ways for recruitment and retention was to look at student debt as a way to erase that potential employee's debt, student debt would be huge. And I think that they might have a lot more people applying to those jobs.
I would absolutely agree with that. We just had a recruitment fair that the Student Nurses Association hosted at the university, and one of the big questions that we were all asking is, do you have loan forgiveness? And obviously that comes with a commitment to these organizations, but it is a really great resource that's offered by many employers. And then I would also just say, Alaska is unique in that it offers so many benefits for going to university in-state for resident Alaskans, and coming from a state where university costs are very high, even paying out-of-state tuition in Alaska is not that bad considering. And so I think that's one of the attractive things about Alaska to me, was that the cost of education here compared to the national average is not that significant.
Okay. So we have a caller from Fairbanks. Jean, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection. You have a question for our panel.
Yes, thank you. Very interesting program. I wondered what they're seeing in terms of opioid addiction and treatments and so on, what their thoughts are.
So the question being the developing the workforce for the response to the opioid crisis, and maybe we could broaden that that topic a little bit even to the general availability of workforce to treat addiction as a health issue. Is that reading too much into your question, Jean?
No, that improves it. Thank you, folks.
Thank you, Jean. Panel.
This is Marianne. From the College of Health standpoint at UAA, I would say that we recognize that the state is in crisis related to opiates, related to behavioral health issues. I mean, the ERs are backed up. Patients are not being able to be treated the way and with the means that they need necessary. So at the College of Health level, we're really looking at expansion and those programs that can have a direct impact in Alaska for behavioral health. One of the things that we have at the School of Nursing is the Psychiatric Mental Health Nurse Practitioner Program, but we're looking at behavioral health techs, behavioral health aides, social work, increasing the numbers of social workers, et cetera. So, we're all hands on deck related to behavioral health in Alaska.
Okay. Fabulous. So just thinking about the question of let's say I'm just entering into the workforce and considering some of the offers that may be coming my way. It's actually, of course, a buyer's market right now. People who are ready to enter the healthcare workforce have a lot of choices. Maybe, Rachel, this is a question for you. What advice do you offer to healthcare employers to attract qualified millennials?
I would say give us opportunities to use what we have to bring to the table. If we have employers that are willing to listen to the ideas that we have to improve the workplace, if they're willing to listen to maybe different ways of doing things that we're already doing in the workplace, that is a huge advantage to us. And I would just say treat us well, and we would love to be part of your workforce.
Okay. And we have time for one more call. Paul, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
Well, thank you, Jay. Yes, I'm Paul Davis, and have been involved with medical student, resident, and nursing education my entire career. And so I've seen quite a lot of these shifts. And the first is just a comment that no matter what changes in the essential temperament and personality of a generation is, we have phenomenally good students and residents and nurses coming up the pike that I've just been tremendously impressed with. And maybe the system has to adapt to accommodate some of these switches. We would always, as the old timers, kind of joke about, some of the residents wanting to leave at 5 o'clock, even with a critically ill patient, because, they have a tennis lesson at 5:15, but that aside, I have heard comments about the tremendous applications, personal statements, experience of students, but then when they come for their interview, because of social media and all the time spent online, that the interaction skills, that just the socialized skills of talking with the interviewers seem to be somewhat stunted. Now, I have not noticed that personally with students I've worked with, but I'd like some comments from the panel on that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Davis. Dr. Murray, from your position as director of the nursing program, is this an issue that you've observed in talking with many students?
Yeah, and it's not just certainly I've seen it through personal observation. I'm going to clarify, I have raised two millennials, so I have some experience as well just being at home. But yes, absolutely. I think that there is something to be said for the screen time, et cetera, not being able to communicate somewhat effectively face-to-face. And so for the UAA Nursing Department, what we've done is really integrated a lot of communication skills into the curriculum so that we can get our students ready to become ready to be communicated into professional communicators in the healthcare workforce. But before they come to the school, or before they come and even apply, I think that's something that definitely needs to be developed. And Rachel, maybe that's something for your generation to kind of embrace, is that emotional intelligence, that communication, interprofessional communication kind of skills.
And I wonder also, is it always a downside, since more and more of communications does occur through social media, even healthcare occurs through telemedicine and other less direct face-to-face interpersonal interactions. Of course, two of my guests today I can't even see, so I guess it's very, very much a part of how we operate today.
That's a great point.
So, Dr. Davis, thank you for joining us today on Line 1. So, we're in the wrap-up phase now. So I think the question that I would like to pose is, what should people take away? We have about 30 seconds, so that's probably only one person. I'm going to look to our resident millennial. Rachel, what should we take away from the program today?
Communication is key. I think that the thing that's going to help us the most in bridging these gaps between the generations is communicating effectively with one another and then understanding where the other individuals are coming from. And I think that that will move mountains in this transition in the healthcare workforce.
Well, I'll just add, I feel very confident of the future of healthcare in Alaska. Thank you for joining us today. Rachel Thompson, the Director of the Student Nurses Association at UAA, also Dr. Marianne Murray, Director of the UAA School of Nursing, and Dan Robinson from joining us from Juneau. Dave Waldron produced today's program. Ammon Swenson edited our web content. And a special shout out to Shelley Wozniak for program assistance today. This is Dr. Jay Butler inviting you to join us next Wednesday when Prentice Pemberton will be back in the saddle and he'll be hosting a discussion about the unintended consequences of protecting our kids. This is Dr. Jay Butler wishing you a healthy life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.